Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you to this beautiful evening in my city and ask you to just put yourself in a very restful mood. Forget about the problems and stress of the past week or the day. Because, you know, when it all comes down, there are some things we just can't do anything about. So I want you to take a virtual trip with me to the island of Jamaica, land we love. Just pretend if you have visited, you know what the island is like at this time of day. The sun is setting over the ocean if you're on the north coast. If you're inland, perhaps it's still setting. You might not be able to see it going down on the ocean, but you know it's setting, and there's a nice cool breeze drifting across the entire island. Some places get more of it than others. But wherever you were when you were there, whether it was long ago or just a short time ago because you were on vacation, I want you to relive that moment, because for the next hour, we deserve some relaxation. So just chill, and as we say in Jamaica, no problem on. So get in the mood, get in the groove, because this evening, I'm the one who's going to be excited because I've discovered yet another one of Jamaican's great names or a person that perhaps a lot of people never heard of. And I feel that there are perhaps quite a number of the descendants of this family that may not even know the full history. So I'm going to be calling out names with the hope that when people come by, if they know someone with that name or if that is their name, it might trigger them to start some search to see if they're related to some of these great people, because through the due diligence of Dr. Joy Lumsden, who's covering a period of Jamaica and Jamaicans that really did not get a lot of press, because in the days that they grew up, even in my time, I mean, you only got press if you got married, died, or you were someone important. Even if you might have been doing something important in your community, it might not have been newsworthy at that time. So a lot of the people that Dr. Lumsden have brought to life are people who perhaps did not get a lot of recognition, but there's documentation about them, and she researched and put pieces together. So with that said, I'm going to start. If you're on my list, you know that we are talking about Mr. Robert Campbell, who I have put in the category of a Renaissance man because of what he did during the time of his life and at the age he did it. I am just amazed. And I'm hoping that the younger generation, when they, if they ever listen to any of these programs, they will really, really be not only proud but inspired by what some Jamaicans of the past that they might never heard of have done during their times. And if they think they're having it hard now, you can imagine what it was like during the 18-something. So let me start. I'm going to be reading different periods of his life, and then we're going to open up for people on the board if you might want to make a comment or you know somebody who know about this story and have something to contribute. So let me start, and most of this is what Dr. Lumsden has put together from the document that she has researched. So it's sort of in a narrative form. Okay, Robert Campbell was born in Kingston, Jamaica on May 7th, 1829. His mother was the child of Stephen Wood, an Englishman holding the position of deputy marshal in the city, which would be Kingston, I suppose, and a woman of pure African ancestry whose parents were both born in Africa. This certainly suggests that his maternal grandmother was probably a slave. His father was a Scotsman, presumably bearing the very common Jamaican name of Campbell. Young Robert would certainly have received some elementary schooling before he was apprenticed at a printer around 1840. Well, here's the sidebar. If he was born in 1829, this young man of mixed parents, one side pure African, one side pure English, I suppose, he was 11 years old when he was apprenticed to a printer. And I think we know what that means. He was put to reside or to stay with a printer to learn the trade. But Dr. Lumsden is assuming that he had received some elementary background training before that. But he was only 11 when he went to that person. Okay, I'm back to the article. 5 years later, he was working as a printer. So that means that he was 16 at that time. But in 1847, he enrolled at the newly established Normal School or Government Teachers Training College in Spanish Town. There, English, Latin, Greek, mathematics, and geography were well taught, but science and agricultural instructions were not on the syllabus. After graduating in 1849, he took a schoolmaster's job in Kingston and also got married. He found it difficult to make ends meet and could not find other work to supplement his inadequate teacher's salary. In 1850, Jamaica was hit by a devastating epidemic of cholera, in which some 32,000 people died. problems of life in Jamaica at that period led many to complete migration, especially to Central America and Australia. In 1852, Campbell took his family first to Nicaragua and then to Panama, but failed to find any opportunity for making a good living. In 1853, he moved with his family to New York. So we have a little picture of what this young man's life was like, because actually he graduated from the teacher's college when he was 20. Now, this is someone who was working as an apprentice from he was 11. But I think in those days, along with learning about printing, you know, he was with a printer. I suppose there were some educational lessons for him to learn from whoever he was with. So we now know that when he traveled to the United States, eventually through Nicaragua and Panama, he was only 23. Now, remember the years we're talking about, folks, so you can see how difficult it must have been. First of all, in those days, even though he was of mixed origin, it doesn't seem like his family was very wealthy, because he was having a hard time making ends meet. There's no mention here of who he married. There's just a mention that he did get married and he had a family. So I'm assuming that perhaps there were some children, but it's not stated. So he's now in New York. Okay, Robert Campbell, I'm back to the article. Robert Campbell was only in the United States for about 7 years, between 1852 to 1858, but much happened to him in that time. He made a considerable impact, and the rest of his life was permanently shaped. Living at first in New York, he experienced great difficulty in finding work, facing discrimination because of his color. Eventually, an Englishman whose name was John Gray gave him a job in his printery in Brooklyn, and he worked there until 1855. In that year, he applied for a position at the Institute for Colored Youth in Philadelphia. It was called the ICY, Institute for Colored Youth. That is now Cheney University of Pennsylvania. And he had that school had started out in 1830, but had a very erratic history until the end of 1840, when it was set on a sound footing, particularly through the work of the principal, Charles Reason. When he retired in 1855, the board of the school appointed two men to replace him, Ebenezer Bassett as principal and Robert Campbell as assistant principal in charge of the teaching of natural science, geography, elementary algebra, and Latin. Campbell had a good grounding in most of these subjects, but none in natural sciences. So he applied to take courses at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. The institute was not prepared to admit him to their lectures on a regular basis because of his color, but offered him a concessionary free ticket, which he refused to accept. my sidebar, though. Just like a Jamaican, don't like freeness. Okay, I'm back. I had to put that one in. Okay, let me get back to my page. Okay, the... He refused to accept. Now, with me and my big mouth, now I lose my pace. So bear with me, listeners, while I get it. No, I got it. Okay. The board of ICY were then able to obtain permission for him to attend lectures at the University of Pennsylvania's Department of Mines, Arts, and Manufacturers. Itself a breaking of the university color bar, and Campbell continued his scientific studies. Sidebar now. So, in other words, folks, he was the first man of color to be person of color. They weren't taking women even at that time. The person of color to attend that all-white university. Specifically for the for what I just mentioned. So let me go back here. He actually gave lectures on scientific subjects as evening classes at the ICY and at the Bankers Literary Institute, named for Benjamin, Banneker. The 18th century African-American astronomer. It is also recorded that Robert Campbell was the only African-American teacher involved in the founding of the National Teachers Association, formerly the forerunner of the National Education Association, in Philadelphia in 1857. So I am so fascinated by that story that has been hidden. I suppose it's hidden from me. I don't know about anybody else. But I am sure a lot of people, a lot of Jamaicans, don't even know that. I thought this was quite a breakthrough to be aired on, call myself giving a voice to these historians who have dug up all this great information about our very small country. So long before people of color were admitted to certain places or could even be recognized, I mean, I thought not only was he in the school to do those subjects, but he went back to his school and taught them. And, of course, by that time, he was an assistant principal. Now, I'm talking about being quite young. You know, first of all, when he came to New York, he was only 23. And when he got the job in Brooklyn as a printer, he was 26. So he was 29 years old when he became an assistant principal. So, you know, that is really quite young. I want to open up the board now. If anyone on the board, I see we have callers, and I want to recognize the fans listening online. Sorry I'm not able to interact with you, but I think you'll see a number right there if you want to call in and be part of the Labrish. So I want to take a minute, too, to let the listeners know that we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And as I delve into some of these historic stories, it is so documented of the diversity. We have people long, long ago that came from varied ethnic backgrounds and economical status that came together and did some great things, because it's obvious that this man had to have a little money to leave Jamaica in the middle of a cholera epidemic and take his family to Nicaragua, to Panama, and eventually ending up in the United States, in New York, in Brooklyn, New York, in 18-something, when I'm sure there weren't even a lot of black people in Brooklyn. But he was working with an English printer. So here's my point. We have made a mark all over the world from centuries ago. So if there's anyone on the board that want to weigh in on this newly discovered information, please hit 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me that you want to join the LabRish. So I see a hand going up at 631-451, and I'll open up the mic. Good evening. You got Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
Good evening. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Janine from Long Island. Welcome to the backyard.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Pardon?
This is some story you're telling us here.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm. I think it's a very fascinating story because have you ever heard that story before?
No, but I have I know some friends with the name Campbell, and one particular friend, I know that her father came from Panama. I'm here wondering if there is any relationship.
Well, I'm hoping that people that know people with these names, as I go through the history and talk about the wonderful things that these people did in the 18-somethings, you know, that they will have their family try to start some sort of, you know, search.
Yes.
Because Dr. Lobson is always wanting to know if there are people with information, authentic information, that can fill in some of the blanks.
Yes,
For instance, we didn't know who he married, you know, what the children's name was, or anything like that.
Yes.
I do have some more very interesting facts about them, but I want to take a minute now to share with our fans that might be, you know, come by later on or are on the board now or online, about Aunt Gloria, who was a guest on our show last year. And I forgot her last name. Janine, you want to tell us Aunt Gloria's name again?
Stewart. Gloria Stewart.
Gloria Stewart.
Her maiden name was Smart, but she married with his name Stewart.
Yes, and she shared a fascinating story with us about remembering. She had a fantastic memory and remembered her mother moving to, her mother and grandparents moving to, I think it was Irish Town or some town.
Yes.
Yes, where people of her background was moving to.
Yeah.
And she was so articulate and interesting with her stories. And I'm saying that to say that Aunt Gloria passed away yesterday, right?
She passed away today.
Oh, today, yes.
They took her off the respirator yesterday. No, they took her off the respirator on Tuesday, and she lasted until today at 11 o'clock. She passed away.
Oh, well, we're certainly going to pray for the family, and may her soul rest in peace. Mm-hmm. How old was Aunt Gloria?
96.
Wow.
Yeah,
so when we interviewed her, it was last year, I think it was.
I think she was 94 at the time when you interviewed her.
Right, right. So I want to take a break now from the story we're doing and to encourage the listeners who may come by later and those on the board and those listening online that if you have an elder in your family, you know, they have such precious stories that, you know, you need to really take time to record their stories, because we never know when we're going to leave the planet, but a lot of times I know we miss opportunities. So I am so happy that Aunt Gloria had shared so much of her memories with us. So now the family will be able to have it, you know, because it can be, I will get it put on a MP3 and send it to you. I definitely will do that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think she was 94 going on 95 when you interviewed her, yeah.
Right. And the I'm always looking for people that have interesting stories about growing up in Jamaica and to share with us and the rest of the world. So if any of the listeners come by or those listening on the board now have family members or they if they have stories about the culture or where they grew up or something special, you know, we don't do politics or religion or who's wrong or who's right or current events because there's a lot of that online already. What I am trying to do is to get some information out about the people and the period that was not recorded. So, Janine, thank you for sharing with us.
You're welcome.
And all our thoughts are with you and your family during this time.
Thank you very much.
Okay, folks. Well, let me get back to my story, if I may. But now we have him in New York, right? No, in Philadelphia, because he's now assistant principal of the school and he's giving lectures. So she starts another paragraph by saying, in spite of his progress and successes in Philadelphia, Campbell presumably found the situation of a colored man in the United States intolerable. When he was invited by Dr. Martin Daly to join an expedition of exploration to West Africa in 1858, he clearly had no hesitation in resigning from the university and leaving the USA behind. His departure from ICY, which was the name of the university at the time, was much regretted, and the students gave him a great send-off, presenting him with a gold watch and chain, and in recognition of his scientific interests, a copy of Alexander von Humboldt's cosmic sketch of a physical description of the universe. Now, you know, during those times, that was a big gift for the students to put together to give him, is my point. So, you know, he was well-loved and respected. But his, you see, his dream was big. So let me go on with the rest of the article. And remember, folks, feel free, listening on the board, to let me know that you want to interact in the library by hitting 1 on your keypad. So the exploration with possible settlement projects advocated by Daney, Delaney, who was the American, of course, got off to a very uncertain start. There was strong opposition among many African Americans to the immigration scheme, which to the Caribbean, Africa, or elsewhere, there were also problems between those who supported the project, including what appears to be a clash over leadership between Delaney and Campbell, especially as Campbell was the only one remaining of those who had originally expressed intentions of going to Africa. Funding, of course, was an important issue, which also created friction. Now for another sidebar. So, folks, in other words, that we were fighting among ourselves. You know what I mean? Get the project off.
Right.
Which, you know, it's just, I suppose, humanity. You know, that's the way we humans are.
Right.
Robert Campbell, his wife, and listen to this, 4 children, left the USA in 1861. And after 5 months in the United Kingdom, arrived in Lagos, L-A-G-O-S, in 1862. Any plan to settle in the interior were abandoned because of ongoing conflict. Campbell lived in Lagos, I think is pronounced, until his death in 1884. Yeah. Lago, is it pronounced Lago or Lagos? I'm not sure, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Had been annexed by the British in 1861, in part to protect commercial interests, and one of Campbell's objectives was always to encourage the commercial activity, which he saw as the lifeblood of the city, which at the time had a population of around 32,000, among whom trading was the most important occupation. Campbell engaged in a variety of commercial activities, brickmaking, a sawmill, a distillery, salt and soup production. But difficult economic conditions in the region and a certain lack of patience on his part meant then none had any great success. He also started a newspaper, the Anglo-African, the second in the region, which ran weekly from June 1863 to December 1865. It provided local and foreign news and gave Campbell the opportunity as editor of encouraging interest in education and cultural activities. He was always a leading figure in organizations such as the Lagos Academy and Scientific Society, and it is clear that he considered the 19th century English form of civilization as the most likely to be beneficial to Africa's future. When he died, the Laos Observer described him as a man of rare intellect and versatility of learning. Robert Campbell, in fact, left the United States for the UK in April of 1859, without informing Delaney, and made his own contacts there with businessmen and missionaries and anti-slave groups. He was particularly successful with Lancashire cotton manufacturers, who were very interested in the idea of being able to obtain raw cotton from areas in West Africa. Campbell was also able to leave for Africa in June of 1859 with British government support and £2,000 in funds. Let me just take a little sidebar here. Now, you see what an astute businessman he was.
Yes, for sure.
Because he wasn't waiting for Delaney.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting his act together like fast.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But here's my point that I get out of all of this. It's because of the basic education that he got in Jamaica.
Exactly.
That really groomed him for all that he did here in the United States and went on to do in by getting all of this communication going and the funding to go to West Africa and start all these businesses there.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it amazing?
And that was a part of his heritage, too.
Yes. I'm telling you, I am just mesmerized by all this news. Really, really, but single-handedly.
Yes.
You know, one person.
Well, he started very young.
Yeah,
Anna.
There's so many lessons to be learned from people of the past who really succeeded in realizing their dream.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this man must have been a dreamer.
Yes.
And he started early. He started early, 11 years old.
Yes.
And he was educated to a certain extent, even at that time.
Yes,
and
he had to be.
People took education very seriously in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very seriously.
And then he went on to further what he didn't know, his education.
Mm-hmm.
With what he, you know, he didn't know before. He went to school to do that.
Right.
So he was ambitious.
Right. Once he get to where he was going, Dr. Lumsden said he made contact with leading members of the local community, especially the Crowthert, Crowther family. I'm not familiar with that name. This is in West Africa now. Whose patriot Samuel Crowther was soon to be the first African bishop of the Church of England.
Yes.
Campbell then proceeded inland to Adeokuta, Abeokuta, and settled he arrived soon after where he and Delaney. Okay, sorry, I missed a part here. And Delaney arrived soon after where he and Delaney hoped they would be able to make agreements with local tribal leaders for the setting up of a farming settlement of African Americans. Such a treaty was signed with the Alake of Abeokuta, Kuta, and Delaney and Campbell left Africa early in 1860, hoping the basis for a settlement was in place. In fact, their treaty was causing much confusion and concentration with government officials, missionaries, and local tribal leaders, all of whom were very skeptical of the Americans' intentions. Back in the UK, Delaney took the lead in contacts with businessmen and other sympathizers, and in July, the African Aid Society was formed to back the settlement in West Africa. The British government, however, was having serious second thoughts, and the following year withdrew support. Later in 1860, Campbell went back to America, hoping to gain further backing for the project. But in the event, the project disintegrated, largely because of the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861. Delaney continued to talk of returning to Africa into 1862, but then turned to dealing with the changed situation in the United States. Campbell, however, had no interest in staying in America or apparently in returning to Jamaica, and so made his plans to return to West Africa. He wrote a pamphlet and a book about his travels in West Africa, which was published in 1861 as a pilgrimage to my motherland. It provides a valuable first-hand account of Africa as experienced by a mid 19th century Jamaican. So even though he only lived in the United States for 7 years.
Yes, yes.
But in Africa, you know, he considered himself experiencing Africa as a Jamaican.
Yes.
I'm wondering, I didn't get a chance to research to find if that is still in print, because it was made into a book, and the name of it is A Pilgrimage to My Motherland by Robert Campbell. I'll have to go search and see if I can find that.
Yeah.
But I'm taking a break here again. There's a little more on the article. But I am just really so fascinated to hear to read the twists and turns of, but like any dream, you know, and any passion, things are not always smooth.
No.
But when a person has the drive and want, because he clearly was not satisfied with being a second-class citizen here.
Exactly.
At the time, at least that's what I'm getting from this. And apparently he didn't even know he was a second-class citizen when he came here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I don't think that there were a lot of black people in Brooklyn.
At that time.
New York at that time. Going around looking for jobs.
I don't think so.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But the tenacity of Jamaican. Yeah,
yes.
Just like a Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, them offered to the university, this white university is offering free thing, but he must come in the evening. He said, hell no, don't look for me.
Yes, in other words, don't buy me off. I want to come
I don't want it. Keep it.
If you can't take me.
Because I have to come when you want me to come.
Yeah, if you can't take me when I want to come, then you can know where to put those tickets.
Right. So, you know, it shows the pride that he was brought up with.
Exactly.
You know, even way back then, people knew who they were.
Yes.
And if they were someone of substance, who, regardless of the color of their skin in their birthland, they were who they were, you know, somebody.
Yes.
And
because
he came here and realized that he was different.
Exactly, because Jamaicans not really afraid of being around white. Because it's something they grew up in, you know. We have a mixture of people back home. So
let me get back to this article here now and put a little finishing touch on it. Our show is not going to be all that long tonight because I'm still busy researching some material on this. But I thought it was so interesting. I'm hoping that some of our listeners will come by later on, or those on the board or listening online, will have some more information that can help us out with putting the pieces on this. And Dr. Lumsden would also like to hear from you if you have any current information about this or anybody else that she has researched. And she has researched on some very interesting people. Hold on, let me go back to the article now. He neither rejected Western culture as alien nor considered assimilation into indigenous cultures practical. Aspects of Western culture that were useful, for example, commerce, education, scientific investigation, and Christianity had to be harnessed for the benefit of Africa. That was his belief.
Yeah.
From the moment in 1858, when he accepted Delaney's invitation to join the exploring party until his death in 1884, Campbell displayed an unfailing commitment to the advancement of Africa. Now, this is how he was described in one of the documentations that Dr. Lumsden found. He was not a full-blood Negro, but a quadron. Q-U-A-D-R-O-O-N. Or it could be quadroon, which is someone, I suppose, that's the name at the time in 18-something for someone of mixed blood.
Mm-hmm.
So back to what they're saying, resembling in personal appearance, a Scotsman, in cast of face, and in his raw boned frame. His eyes were keen and piercing, his nose thin and sensitive, well bridged and straight.
Mm-hmm.
The mouth was thin and straight lined, the chin pronounced and inclined to be square, the cheekbone prominent, while a mustache and scrawny, scattering beard covered his lower face.
Sounds like a handsome man.
Yes, well, here, I just love words. I call myself a wordsmith,
mm-hmm.
and I am just so intrigued about how writers of the past would describe things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had a different style in their description that, of course, is quite outdated in today's language.
Right.
But I just find it very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would copy that and share that with you. Perhaps on Dr. Lumsden's page, she does say where all this documentation is coming from, because she really does not publish anything that is not verified in a recognizable, publication someplace.
Yes.
So let me just tell you a little bit about what was happening in education during the period that he was here. Education, and this is not from Dr. Lumsden, this is from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Or some other article as I was researching this. Education for people of color was a controversial issue. Some states had established public schools for black children as early as the 1820s. However, the slave-holding states had outlawed education for slaves, and some states had even outlawed education for free blacks.
Yeah.
Even so, some took risk at learning to read. And he is coming up here and going to a university.
City.
Is my point.
Yeah.
So you see the difference
in the education
that was happening right here in the United States to what was happening in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't talk for all the other islands, but I'm sure it was similar to Jamaica.
Right.
And that's a vast difference.
Very.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So here, let me just tell you now that he was the first black, or the only black at the time, but the first black, during the 18-something, the teachers all over the states
mm-hmm.
were not unionized. There were not a group.
Yes.
And there were individual groups scattered over the states that were in the union at that time.
Yes.
And they sent out an invitation to, I suppose, all the teachers, and since he was an assistant principal at a university, he got one.
Yes.
Because they were going to be forming a union,
yes.
You know, coming together as a group.
Yes.
And it is stated in the document that there were 32 people who came to this meeting, and he, Robert Campbell, was the only person of color.
You see what I mean?
And that became the forerunner for the National Teachers Education Association, as we know it now.
Yes.
It had a different acronym and a different name, you know what I mean, at the
mm-hmm.
time. But it became the National Association for Teachers.
Yes.
Ain't that something?
Yes, sure is.
So there again is another, as I call it, Jamaican first. As a matter of fact, it is the National Education Association, and it's the largest professional organization and the largest labor union in the United States. representing public school teachers and other support personnel, faculty and staff at colleges and universities, retired educators and college students preparing to become teachers. The NEA, which is what it's called today, has 3.2 million members and is headquartered in Washington. But when he joined it, or when he went to the meeting, it was in Philadelphia or one of those places. But he was the first person of color to be there. So there again is another Jamaican first. So with that said, do you know, we have 10 minutes to complete our hour, but I am just fascinated by all the details in these stories. The historians have been able to sort of piece together to give us the glimpse of what life was like.
Yeah, thank God for that. Or something like this, we would never know about it.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. And there are some more other fascinating people that she has there that I am going to hopefully bring to life. But I really want to ask the listeners who come by, if you know any Campbells that may be related to this family, you know, please have them join our mailing list or send us a note. You know, we have a website, which I say every week is going to be bigger and better, and it's not getting there. But please bear with me. We're working on it. It's backyardlabrish.com, and there's a place there that you can send me an email, or if you'd like to be added to our list of fans who get just an email telling them what we're going to be talking about. We'd love, or if you want to make a comment, we'd like to hear your comments as to what you find interesting, what you'd like us to research for you. As long as it celebrates, enlightens, and preserves, that's what my passion is, because I am really, every day I consider myself blessed to be born in the beautiful island of Jamaica when I was born there. Of all the places on the map, that's the only place that I'd rather be during the period of my birth, which was a long time ago. And as I research and talk about these, the forerunners of all the beauty in our culture and the things we have to be proud about, it really, really inspires me to keep digging. So I'd like to ask anyone on the board to put your hand up if you want to make a comment or to interact. And Miss Janine, I hope you were as fascinated as I was.
Yes,
to read
I was.
All the details about Mr. Robert Campbell.
Yes, and as I said, I have a friend. And her maiden name was Campbell. I know her father came from Panama. So now I'm curious. I have to ask her.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, he was 11 years old when he was apprenticed with the printer in Kingston.
Yeah.
He was 20 years old when he graduated from the Teachers College in Spanish Town.
He
was 23 years old when he left for Nicaragua and Panama. He was 26 years old when he got the job in Brooklyn.
This
was in 1855.
Wow.
You hear me? 1855. He's a black man working in an English printery in Brooklyn.
That means he had to be good.
People in slavery.
Yes.
He was 29 when he became an assistant principal at the school, which is now Cheney University. He was 34 when he was in West Africa as editor of the newspaper and participating in all these various businesses. And, you know, long ago they had a show on TV and there were jiving Jamaicans that have six jobs.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that joke.
Yes.
But it went before our time.
Yes.
Because he had about six different business things he was juggling.
Yes.
While he was trying to do his thing in West Africa, he was, he was really 32 when that was happening. But he was only 55 when he passed away.
55. Wow.
Yes.
That's young.
Well, I'm sure that their descendants, it didn't say whether they were boys or girls.
Yes.
His four children. But Dr. Lums then recorded that he had four children.
Yes, yeah. Oh, so he was pretty young when he died, 55.
Yes, definitely.
And yet he lived a complete life.
Oh, yes, definitely. Even wrote a book.
Yes.
Even wrote a book. Wrote
yes.
And published.
Even at that age, he really did good.
Yes. And Dr. Lumsden mentioned that during that period, you know, with the plague going on in Jamaica,
yes.
People were leaving Jamaica for various places. I mean, people who were born there.
Yes.
For Australia, you know, all over the world. But I just try to picture what travel was like, because they certainly didn't have planes.
No, maybe they didn't have... They had the propeller. At certain point, but it was
on
mostly,
the ship.
Eh? I think
it was ship. It
yes,
was traveled by ship.
Yes, I think.
And it wasn't the luxury liners that we're going on vacation on in now.
No.
So you know, for women and children, that must have been quite a hardship. And my point is that with determination and drive, people can do anything that they really want to do.
That's true.
These people of the past had to overcome a lot of obstacles.
Yes.
You know, but they kept moving. Those who achieved kept moving. So I hope that these stories will be inspiring, you know, to other people, not just Jamaicans, but anyone who, you know, may listen to them and take some nuggets of wisdom, some elements of encouragement.
Yes.
Keep pressing on towards your dreams.
That's it.
So, Miss Janine, our hearts are with you this evening.
Thank you.
And we know that Aunt Gloria is happy where she is. She had a wonderful life.
She did.
And her memory to the last. And that is quite a gift.
Even to the last, when she was dying, she knew everything.
Mm-hmm. No, that is a beautiful memory to have of her.
Yes.
So she will be in our thoughts. And with that said, I want to thank all the fans. I want to ask you to continue to send in the stories to your friends so you can spread the word about the Labrish in the backyard. And remind your friends that they're free to join us in this celebration and of Jamaica. So, Miss Janine, next Thursday I hope to see you here in the backyard.
Yes,
where we celebrate.
Oh,
light
I'm
and
not
preserve.
Too sure. If,
Excuse
if,
me?
I'm not sure if I'll be in the backyard next week if
oh,
I go to
I
Aunt
see.
Gloria's funeral.
Yes. Well, we'll forgive you.
Yes.
And our thoughts will be with you.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. It has been my pleasure. You can continue to inspire me. And I want to end, as I always do, to encourage you to make it a
great week.
Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.